This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
It's Friday. It's the last day of January, which means we are just 2 weeks away from the start of the 2020 college baseball season. Welcome back to another edition of the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. This is episode 59, and yeah, we're only 2 weeks away from college baseball arriving. I know it kind of sneaks up on you this time of year because it starts earlier than Major League Baseball, and you still get college baseball ongoing, and it feels like college football just ended, especially with the way they schedule those playoff games and the national championship game now. It literally just ended not too long ago. But the college baseball season is almost here. Official practice began last week on Friday. I was over meeting with David Pierce and Texas players at the annual media availability as they kick off official practice ahead of the 2020 season. Is it 2020 or 2020, the best way to say that? I think I've said it both ways now, but whatever. You get the point. The season is almost here, and yeah, those guys only get 3 weeks of official practice before the season begins. Now, they do get an opportunity to do some group and individual work prior to that, but there's not a lot of practice time before, so it's like, all right, play ball, go out there, hope your pitchers are ready and their arms are in shape with those 3 weeks of scrimmages you just had. That's all you get before the season begins. So Texas begins the season at Rice on Friday, February 14th for a three-game series down there at Reckling Park. So it'll start with a bang. One of the premier rivalries in college baseball from 2000 to 2010 kind of died down the last 10 years because they didn't play as much and a little bad blood behind the scenes about that and things like that. And Rice hasn't been as good and Texas hasn't been as good, but those two will open up. It's always entertaining when those two play. And they will play again down at Reckling Park in Houston. So Saturday, you get an opportunity to see this version of the Texas Longhorns. They have their annual alumni game Saturday at 3:30 p.m. It's going to be televised on Longhorn Network. So if you can't get to the dish or you don't live in Austin, set the DVR for 3:30 p.m. on LHN to get a glimpse at the alumni game, which usually turns into by about the fourth or fifth inning an inter-squad scrimmage because pro teams with their players are very hesitant to let those guys play right now this early in the season before they even report to spring training and their respective facilities and all that sort of thing, especially from the pitching side as well. So it usually turns into an inter-squad scrimmage about midway through. But it's a really good opportunity to get a look at just where coaches are at with their thought process positionally. And we'll start with third base. I mean, at orangebloods.com today, I wrote five things that I'll be following closely about the alumni game. And it feels like positionally, in terms of a lineup, a lot of things are pretty set. If you look at the outfield, we know Eric Kennedy, Duke Ellis, Austin Todd, with Douglas Hodo mixing in there as well, a guy that I think Texas wants to get at bats to and wants to get in the outfield some as they kind of rotate those spots, because he had such a standout fall and is a plus athlete and can make an impact both defensively and offensively. But you know what the outfield picture looks like. You know for the most part what the infield picture looks like. David Pierce, again, last week didn't budge at all about Zach Zuby at first base. That is his starting first baseman. And I swear, man, I saw Zach again as those guys were practicing a little bit on last Friday, and it looks like he's improved his body even more. Coming from the fall, looks like he's trimmed up a little bit more. He looks great. He's moving around much, much better, which I think will show up the most defensively as he's able to get to his left and to his right much better than he was in the past. So David Pierce didn't budge from that. Second base and shortstop, I think that's going to be a true freshman duo. It was a little interesting that David Pierce's conviction about those two was not quite the same as it was in the fall. I'm not trying to read into the lines too much with that, but I think he just acknowledges that it is what it is. It's two true freshmen that are in your middle infielder, in your middle infield as starters. And with that comes some risk. You just don't know for sure with any freshman. You just don't know for sure how they're going to react and how they're going to play until the games actually start happening. I remember when Andy McGuire arrived at Texas, one of the more hyped infielders than I can recall. And it just didn't work. And then he eventually worked his way all the way back after not being a part of the program to be a relief pitcher. They ended up getting drafted in the Blue Jays organization. So kudos to him for putting in years of work and then you just having that mental fortitude to come back and work your way back onto the team to have a big impact for an Omaha team. And now he's playing professional baseball. But he arrived, you know, as this guy like, okay, this is going to be an impact third baseman for 3 years and then he's going to go pro. And it just didn't happen. You know, think back to Eric Kennedy, a guy that didn't arrive with much hype at all. Texas wasn't even really quite sure what it had in him. It just knew that, hey, this was Nick's little brother. He's really, really fast. He's strong, and he's got a chance to be a good player. He shows up, and he's, you know, one of the best, if not the best hitter on the team last season. So you just don't quite know until those guys get out there. It's one thing to do it in the fall. It's one thing to do it in scrimmages against junior college teams. It's another thing to do it in against Division I competition when you got fans in the stands and the games matter. I think what's going to work in Texas's favor with both of those players, Brendan Dixon and Trey Faltini, they have really strong mental makeup. They've got a lot of leadership intangibles. They're highly competitive. They really put in the work. I mean, these are two guys that if they can rub off on everybody else, and I think that a lot of these freshmen already have, and some of these veteran guys are helping that as well, guys like Bryce Elder and Ty Madden, they put in the work. If there's something that they need to work on, they're going to work on it. And they've got a guy coaching the infield that is all about work. I mean, Troy Tulowitzki is just the definition of a baseball junkie. He will spend every moment he can at the field, in the facility, whatever, teaching and trying to get guys better. So that's going to work in those guys' favor. I don't think a slow start will bug those guys more than it maybe would some other freshmen, just because they are so strong. They've played in so many high-level games, whether it's high school or select. And, you know, in the case of Faltini, played on Team USA. But, you know, you just don't know with freshmen. I mean, there could be some ups and downs. I thought Dixon was more of a bat-first guy in the fall. He hit a homer in, I think, two of the JUCO scrimmages, both JUCO scrimmages, I think. Faltini looked a little bit more like a kind of a glove guy early on, but then the bat really started to come on. I say glove guy, he's raw defensively. He's focusing on shortstop for the first time ever. I mean, he's been a guy that's had to balance pitcher and infielder throughout his entire prep career leading up to this point. And I think it's one of the reasons why he picked Texas instead of signing was an opportunity to be a shortstop all the time. You know, scouts were split on him. Some really liked him as a pitcher. Some liked him more as a middle-of-the-diamond player, whether that was maybe shortstop or perhaps center field. But he's going to get an opportunity to be the everyday shortstop at Texas now. And if he holds on to that for the foreseeable future for, you know, 3, maybe 4 years as well. So, but those two guys, I think, are penciled into those positions. Catcher, DJ Petrinski, met with the media last Friday, which is always a good sign when you got guys meeting with the media, and Faltini did as well, which speaks to kind of how Texas views him as a starting shortstop. Petrinski said he's catching, he's working his arm strength back up and that shoulder strength. He's expected to be 100% or very, very close to it when the season arrives, which would be a huge boost for Texas. Man, they missed that guy. And, you know, perhaps this is the media guy in me that covers so many of these things, but he was more sure of himself, more open, more in depth with his responses with us than ever before. He said multiple times that he really learned a lot from just being forced to observe what was going on with the team last year. And I went away from that conversation with Petrinski thinking, man, this guy's going to be a no doubt leader for this baseball team this year. He said he learned a lot just from what works, what didn't work, what went wrong about last season. In the past, he's been more of a reserved guy, not a big talker, but I really think that he relishes an opportunity now, knowing that it's his last season at Texas. He's very, very thankful of the opportunity to play at Texas. I mean, this is still something I think he probably has to pinch himself at some times, thinking, man, how did I end up here? But he's very thankful for the opportunity to play at Texas again. But I think he's going to be a vocal guy. I think he and Bryce Elder in particular, two guys that were more quiet in the past, two guys that are going to play very big parts on this team this season, and I think they're going to play very big roles as leaders as well. So assuming he's 100%, he's going to catch. The luxury Texas has because of the really good job they did recruiting is he doesn't have to catch every single game or even a vast majority of games because they do have some good quality depth behind him, mainly Silas Ardoin, a true freshman catcher known for his catch and throw skill, his defensive ability. His dad played in the big leagues. He's a guy that pitchers have talked up some as somebody that has a really bright future. So the catching situation is going to be better than it was last season. Now, that's a low bar to clear. It was the worst catching situation I've ever seen at Texas last year. It's like you look at some of the Texas catchers in the past, you know, Thigpen, Teagarden, Rupp, Barrera, and then you look at last year and it's like, oh my God, what happened to Texas? It was just every bad thing that could have happened to that position happened to that position, and they're left with a really, really bad situation. So they did a really good job of being proactive and going and adding, I guess, three true freshman catchers and then bringing back Kasten Peter as well. So they've made sure that unless five guys get hurt, their catching situation is probably going to be in a better position than it was last season. So first base, second base, shortstop, left field, center field, right field, catcher, I think those positions are penciled in. The one that's totally in the up in the air right now is third base. And the bummer was going out and seeing Texas on Friday and seeing Andre Duplantier II in shorts with a soft cast on his left hand wrist. And David Pierce said that he fractured the hamate bone in that left hand or wrist and had surgery, it sounded like just before Friday, so sometime earlier that week, last week. So he's probably a little over a week removed from that procedure now. And that's a tough injury. You know, it used to happen a lot, and people couldn't quite figure out why, and I think you don't see it quite as much in baseball. But it's a difficult injury because you can come back and swing the bat. You know, David Pierce said that it sounded like the earliest you could start swinging again would be in 3 weeks, but they're going to be conservative with him and not be too aggressive. Because I think 3 weeks is a very aggressive prognosis. I think it's probably going to be 4 weeks before he starts swinging a bat again. But it's not the swinging the bat part that is the issue getting back. Oftentimes, guys have this injury and they can start swinging in 3 or 4 weeks, especially if they're, you know, as Pierce mentioned, a pro situation where they're trying to rush these guys back. The issue becomes how quickly does the power return? And it's been a tough thing to predict. I think you can look in examples in professional baseball of the power coming back almost immediately after those guys start swinging the bat again. I believe that's the injury that Matt Olson had for the Oakland Athletics last year, and I think he ended up playing almost 130 games and hit 36 homers, I think. You can tell I've been doing some fantasy baseball research. Shea Lang Lear at Baylor last year, the really, really standout catcher that ended up being a first-round pick in the Major League Draft, he had that injury, and I was surprised at how quickly his power started to return as well. But it's still unpredictable, and you're talking about a true freshman that was really, really starting to focus on hitting probably more than he ever has before. Now, he did both in high school, but everybody thought that pitching was going to be what he did in college, and he showed up. He started swinging the bat so well, and the Texas coaches realized this guy picks up on things extremely quickly. You know, there's just some players that just have that innate ability to where you can show them a video or you can tell them something about their swing, and they can just pick it up instantly. You know, whereas some guys, it's like they'll comprehend what you're saying. They're studying the film, and it just takes them a while to really put those changes into action. But with Duplantier, it was just, you know, an instant thing. Hey, you know, change your swing like this. And his swing looked way different than it did in high school. And he was one of the best hitters in the fall for Texas. But now you're talking about a true freshman that not only is having to come back from this hamate injury, which you don't quite know for sure when he'll be able to swing a bat and then when that power will come, but you're also talking about a guy that's going to miss a lot of live scrimmage at-bats. You know, this is a pivotal time for those young players to just get reps, get more reps against Division I college pitching, get more comfortable in their skin as collegiate baseball players. Now, I think Duplantier will handle that better than most freshmen. He's a stud physically. He is a good-looking guy physically, big, strong, athletic. I mentioned that how quickly he adjusts to things. So I think that he's going to be able to handle that transition better than most freshmen would. But he's still behind the curve here because of just missing those at-bats. And you just don't know when that power is going to come. So that's the one position to me that is the number one thing to follow during Saturday's alumni game is how does Texas approach third base? Before I get to that, I wanted to add that Duplantier is focusing on pitching right now because it is his left wrist or hand injury. He still can pitch. So I don't know 100% for sure if that means he could pitch in games, but I would assume because the season does begin in 2 weeks and they said that he could maybe start swinging a bat in 3 weeks based on last week, so 2 weeks from now, I would think that he'd be able to pitch when the season begins. I know he can. He's been throwing right now, so we'll see if he factors into the mix as a bullpen guy right away. He was up to 94 in the fall with three pitches that were for strikes and really had some promise. I mean, he's got a really bright future offensively and on the mound as well. But getting back to third base, it's, you know, Cam Williams, Murphy Staley, Lance Ford, maybe Sam Bertelsen as well. I mean, there's a lot of guys that could be in the mix there as Texas tries to figure out who they want to pencil in as their starter. And you might see some situation early on where multiple guys get looks in games as they're trying to figure that out. If you made me pick right now, I would say that I would pick Murphy Staley to be the guy. You know, he was really steady in the fall. He had a solid fall with the bat and the glove. His glove was actually better than I anticipated it being, arriving from Orange Coast College out in California. He actually, you know, from a routine play standpoint, looked like he could play shortstop in a pinch if Texas really needed him to. Now, he wouldn't have the range and the athleticism of a guy like Faltini, but he'd make the routine plays. And he seemed very calm. You know, sometimes these guys, they get from JUCO to this level and the game starts to speed up on them a little bit. It didn't happen with Staley in the fall. It looks like one of those guys that's got a really steady heart rate on the field, stays within himself, doesn't try to do too much. He put the ball in play at a pretty high rate, made the routine plays defensively. I think that that's a guy that, if you look at what Texas could really benefit from at third base and with a young infield, just kind of that calming presence, a guy that just makes the routine plays. You know he's going to compete in the batter's box. You know that while he might not be a star or have star potential, he's got the potential to be just a solid regular player, which I think Texas would be thrilled with at this point, given what's happened with Duplantier injury and him being the likely starting third baseman before that hamate injury. So I would probably pick Staley if you made me pick right now who was going to be that third baseman. But it's going to be something to follow. I think you'll see multiple guys get a look there for Texas during Saturday's alumni game because that's the one position I think Texas coaches need to get an answer for because I think they have their answers everywhere else, especially in the outfield, especially at catcher if Petrinski's healthy. They seem fully committed to Zuby at first base, and they seem fully committed to Dixon in Faltini in the middle of the infield. So really, it's third base is the one that's up for grabs right now. And I think that sort of steadying presence at third base, I think would be what Texas would benefit from most. I've already mentioned the middle infield a lot. That's going to be something I'm going to be following just to see how those freshmen handle a game with fans in the stands again and all that sort of thing with the cameras rolling. I mean, the game's going to be on LHN. I mentioned Petrinski's health. That'll be something to follow. I'm assuming he's going to catch some. He says he's been catching. What does the arm look like? What does the shoulder look like? How is he receiving the ball behind home plate? It's going to be something to follow. Zubia defensively, I mentioned him at first base. That's something I'm going to be following during Saturday's alumni game. And then the pitching, too. Now, who throws on Saturday is determined by who threw during the week. So Texas, you know, college baseball teams during this part of the year, they're doing a lot of, I think, like skill and drill and installation work, you know, your bunt coverages and your defensive calls and all those sorts of things and your offensive signs and calls and what you'd like to do there from a strategy standpoint. They're doing a lot of those things in practice, but most often the practices end with a scrimmage. whether that's 5 innings, 7 innings, whatever it is, they're trying to get these guys into simulated game situations to see what they have from a roster standpoint and talent standpoint. So who throws on Saturday is determined by who threw earlier in the week. When did they throw? So if you don't see a guy pitch on Saturday, it probably means he pitched, especially if a reliever doesn't throw, it probably means he pitched on Friday. If a starter doesn't throw, it probably means he either pitched on Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, something like that. They want to keep these guys very much on a normal schedule, which I'm assuming you're not going to see Bryce Elder on Saturday, because as a Friday night starter, he's probably thrown on Fridays right now as they try to get him on a normal rest schedule as the season approaches. So I would think you'd see Ty Madden on Saturday because he's probably going to be that Saturday starter. Maybe you don't see a Pete Hansen because I think that's a guy they really like as a potential weekend starter. Maybe he's throwing on Sundays right now. So if you don't see some guys pitch, don't freak out. It's just because they probably threw earlier in the week. That said, I think that Texas has a pretty good idea of what it thinks its weekend rotation can be. I mentioned Elder on Friday. By the way, I think it was bullshit that he wasn't the preseason Big 12 Pitcher of the Year. Look, I know Cade Cavalli throws 99 miles an hour and might end up being a first-round pick. Guy's got huge upside. But he was just okay last season. I think he was almost at 7 walks per 9 innings in Big 12 play. You look at the season that Elder had, it was a much better season. That was a total head-scratcher to me, although Elder was a unanimous preseason All-Big 12 selection, and he was joined on that list by Eric Kennedy. Those were the two Longhorns on that list, just that single-team preseason All-Big 12 team. But anyway, Elder is going to be on Fridays, barring a gigantic shock. I think that Madden is going to be in there somewhere, whether it's Saturday or Sunday. It's a guy that met with the media. I loved hearing that he's like, you know what, I'm getting back to the four-seam. Threw too many sinkers last year. Amen, man. Preach it. Four-seams up, breaking balls down. Just live off it, dude, because he throws really, really hard. I did a podcast last year predicting that at some point at Texas he'd throw 100 miles an hour. I still believe that. He ended the year, I had to go back and look at, I posted this on my Instagram. He ended the year with either a 97 or a 98. In and outing. I think it was a 98. Dude's got big-time velocity in the tank. So it was music to my ears to hear that he was getting back to being a true power pitcher with a lot of four seams, especially up in the zone, and get that breaking ball going as well. They brought him out and talked to the media. If he was not going to have a big role on his team, he wouldn't have come out and talked to the media. I think I said that right. I need more coffee today. Anyway, I think that he's going to be Saturday or Sunday. And then that other spot I think is going to come down to Colby Kubicek, who had a fantastic summer in the Cape Cod League. Coy Cobb and Pete Hansen. And Hansen, a true freshman, he's going to be a stud. He is going to be a really, really good college pitcher. Plus athlete on the mound. Can throw strikes with, I think, 3 or 4 pitches. I have to look back at my notes. Lefty, he was holding his velocity in the fall. Now, he's not going to light up the radar gun, but I think in time he's going to add more velocity. But he can be a high 80s, low 90s guy consistently with command and control with the fastball and mixing speeds and has some feel for pitching. That's a guy that Texas was really excited about in the fall. And that's a guy, I remember, you know, watching him with at one of the junior college scrimmages, and there were probably about 20 scouts there. And a high-ranking guy, one organization is like, Texas needs to get more guys like that. And amen, they do need to get more guys like that, and they are getting more guys like that. You'll see it with some of these freshman players. You'll definitely see it with some of the guys that arrive from the next recruiting class as well. But I think Texas has a pretty good idea of what they want their weekend rotation to be. The bullpen, I think, is where things are a little bit up in the air. Now, Mason Bryant is probably going to play a big role. I think Cam Fields is going to play a really big role. Now that they've focused him just primarily on pitching, he's not doing outfield and hitting anymore. They've started to see a little bit of an uptick in his performance on the mound. He threw the ball really well to end the fall, especially the slider was really lively, and the fastball had some really good velocity. So I think him and Bryant are going to play big roles in the back ends of games. Cole Quintanilla, they got to get something from him. Is he going to be a guy that's ready to take that step? I mean, he was so dominant in that series against LSU last year. And then as the middle of the season hit, I think he started to get fatigued some. I mean, it was his first true season back from Tommy John surgery. his velocity was kind of hit or miss in the fall. So what are they going to get from him? Is that a guy that's going to be poised to make a jump this season as an impact reliever? Dawson Merriman, a JUCO addition that pitched in the Cape Cod League, he's going to throw innings probably in the back end of games with that unique look, kind of that submarine-ish look from the right side, that really lively moving fastball with the sweeping breaking ball. He throws strikes, he competes. I think he's going to be in the back end of games. But who else is going to join those guys? You know, Adonis Diaz right now is pitching for a roster spot, and I think Texas is starting to be a little bit encouraged by the way he's throwing the baseball. You know, if he can start to find some of that velocity he lost when, you know, he was a mid-90s guy at San Jacinto Junior College and then had Tommy John surgery, and he just hasn't had that same velocity ever since. If he can get close to that, I think he's going to make the roster because the breaking ball and the pitchability are there in the back end of games. But how does that bullpen shake out for Texas? Do you have some freshman guys like Duplantier and Sam Walbridge and guys like that that are making an impact in the back end of games? Or, you know, what does that look like? You know, Tristan Stevens is a guy that I really liked last season. Really, really good slider. Is he fully healthy and ready to contribute? If he is, I think that's a guy that's going to make an impact on the back end of games. So how does that bullpen shake out? I think you'll see a lot of potential relievers throwing in Saturday's alumni game as they're just trying to get some guys inning and get some work and see what they have there. But I think that that's the one question mark with the pitching staff right now is, how good are Bryant and Fields going to be? How much can Merriman help us? We know he's going to throw a lot. Is Quintanilla ready to make that jump? And then who helps those guys in the back ends of games or in the middle of games when you've got a starting pitcher that you've got to go get in the sixth inning? And you need one of those bridge guys to get you to Fields or Bryant or somebody else later in the game. And I think that's also kind of determined, too, on what happens with the rotation, not just the weekend rotation, but who Texas tabs as their Tuesday guy, because they could have a really, really good Tuesday starter, which is an advantage. If you can sweep a lot of those Tuesday games and win some of those ones against the big names, you know, Arizona, for example, is coming to Austin to play in the midweek before Texas plays Cal State Fullerton. If you can win those games, it can help you a little bit resume-wise, especially if you just don't lose any of those games against those inferior opponents. So Texas has an opportunity to have a really good Tuesday starter. We'll wrap up with, you know, I'm sure David Pierce has still got a little bit of a heavy heart. You know, the tragic Kobe Bryant helicopter crash that just rocked the world, really. Not just the sports world, the world. You know, just seeing the reaction across the globe to the tragic loss of Kobe Bryant and his wife. I mean, excuse me, not his wife. His young daughter, Gigi. And unfortunately, you know, those weren't the only people that we lost in that helicopter crash. And John Altobelli, the longtime head coach at Orange Coast College, he was on that helicopter too with his daughter that played with Kobe's daughter and his wife. And they tragically passed away as well. A guy that coached Murphy Staley last year and a guy that started in the outfield with David Pierce at the University of Houston and was David Pierce's college roommate. I mean, those two guys were very close. They saw each other often. They talked. They just saw each other recently. I believe Pierce said that, you know, Altobelli was being named, I think, like one of the junior college coaches of the year or something like that. And they made it a point to be there to see him. And, I mean, that's, you know, David Pierce sent a really heartfelt message out about just, you know, the loss that he was dealing with and what kind of person John was. And you saw the baseball community really react. I mean, this is a guy that coached in the Cape Cod League a lot. You know, you saw some big leaguers, guys like Jeff McNeil, talking about the impact that he made on their careers, and a really respected member of the baseball community. Garrett Cole tweeted out a long message as a guy that has formed the Orange Coast area about just the reputation that Altobelli had in the baseball community there. And it's I'm sure Murphy and David are still, you know, have a heavy heart right now. I mean, that's a tough situation. I mean, a guy like Murphy, he was just playing for the guy last year. You know, David Pierce had recently talked to the guy, and they go way back as college roommates that, you know, were key contributors on a really good University of Houston team. So, you know, I'm sure those guys are probably, you know, perhaps dedicating this season to, you know, and playing in the spirit of John, because I know it's a guy that both Murphy and David really, really highly respected and credit for, you know, kind of helping them along through their baseball careers as well. So hate to end the podcast on a bummer note, but if you haven't read David Pierce's message that he tweeted out about John Altobello, take some time to go read it and go read about John, what the person he was, the coach he was. I mean, there's a lot of, unfortunately, you know, a tragic loss like this, you know, you often learn way more about a person you really didn't know anything about, because people are just outpouring of the stories and things like that. So you can go take the time and read a lot about John. There's a lot of people that have written about him in the recent days after that tragic loss. And I'm sure David and Murphy are still dealing with a little bit of a heavy heart right now. So hate to end the podcast on a bummer note, but that's going to wrap up this edition of the Extra Bases Podcast on theact.com, episode 59. Thank you for listening. Get to theact.com. If you didn't listen to the last edition of the Extra Bases Podcast, I had Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball on, just kind of going over the Big 12 landscape. Oh, I almost totally forgot. Before we wrap it up, the Big 12 coaches released their preseason poll in addition to their preseason team. Texas was picked to finish fifth in the league by the coaches. Strange list, because West Virginia received a first-place vote, which West Virginia has never finished better than fourth in the Big 12, and they just lost perhaps the best starting pitcher in the history of the program. I don't quite know what's going on with that, but now that I say that, West Virginia is probably going to stun everybody and win the Big 12. Texas Tech, as expected, was the heavy favorite to win the league. Texas received a first-place vote, so did TCU, and so did West Virginia. Texas Tech got all the other first-place votes. A head coach can't vote for his own team, so Texas Tech's Tim Tadlock had to vote for somebody else. I don't know who it was. I would think that he voted for Texas, and TCU and West Virginia voted for each other, because those two head coaches are pretty close. But whatever. Texas predicted to finish fifth in the league. I would have flipped Texas and TCU. TCU was predicted to finish third, then Oklahoma, then Texas. I probably would have flipped Texas and TCU. But regardless, I think you could see a situation where, you know, let's assume Tech wins the league like many expects. I think you could see 2 through 5 separated by very, very little. Could be one of those years where it's just like second and third are separated by a half game or a game, and then third and fourth by a half game or a game, and then fourth and fifth by a half game or a game. So I think you're going to see a pretty tight group of teams competing for a Big 12 championship. But Texas predicted to finish fifth in the league, and let's hope that Texas exceeds that, because I'd like to write about wins and cover a good team for a change, kind of like we did in the 2018 season. All right, I've gone on enough. It's Friday. Enjoy your weekend. If you're getting out to the dish, enjoy the alumni game. Remember to set your DVR at 3:30 p.m. on Longhorn Network to check out the newest installment of the Texas baseball team. Until next time, you can follow me on Twitter at DMacomasOB. Email me, Dustin@orangebloods.com. Check out all of our writing at orangebloods.com and all of our podcast content at theyak.com. And until I talk to y'all next time, take care.